signature that in 2B we have complex geometry and in 2A we have simplectic geometry. And so we look for a mathematical construction that contains and extends complex and simplectic geometry and that is generalized complex geometry. So let me start today by reviewing some basic details about generalized complex geometry that we will need. So generalized complex geometry is differential geometry on T plus T star. So we treat T plus T star as a single bundle, and the sections of this are the vector fields plus a one form. So usual differential geometry is with T and separately with T star, and there are two separate bundles whose sections are the vector fields and then separately the one forms. So now Kitchen and Valtieri constructed this differential geometry on T plus T star, treating T plus T star as a single bundle. Then on T plus T star, you can do similar things that you do on T, such as define a generalized almost complex structure, which is a map from T plus T star to T plus T star, and it's such that it squares to minus 1. But this is a minus 1, a 2D by 2D identity matrix. So if the dimension of T or the dimension of the manifold is P, then this is a 2D by 2D dimensional matrix, and then we demand the matrix, so this I is a matrix on T plus T star. We demand the Hermitian with respect to the generalized almost complex structure, at least this condition. So to understand this a little bit better, we do a comparison of what the things that we define on T and the things that we define on T plus T star. On T, we can also define a general, an almost complex structure, and here I call it J-tilde, this tilde to distinguish this from the two forms. So the two forms usually mark, I guess, call it W or omega. I call it J, and so the almost complex structure, I call it J-tilde. So the almost complex structure on T is a map such that square is minus 1, and this is a V by V identity matrix. On T plus T star, we do something similar, and we define a generalized almost complex structure, which is a map that goes from T plus T star to itself, and it squares to minus 1, and this is a 2D by 2D identity matrix. I go a little bit fast here, because you've seen this. With using this almost complex structure, we can define the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic projectors. It's projected onto the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic bundles of P. So this is how you construct the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic projectors. And you can do exactly the same here, just taking again the 2D by 2D identity matrix. So this projects onto the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic bundles of P plus T star. The integrability condition on T, there are many ways to write this. One way is to say that the Lie bracket of two holomorphic vectors should again be holomorphic for any two vectors. That is the phi minus of, so phi plus of x is a holomorphic vector, phi minus of y is a holomorphic vector, and the phi minus of this should be zero. This is, if this happens for any two x and y, this almost complex structure is integrable, and then we can drop the almost and talk about the complex structure. So this is the same as the Ninus tensor being equal to zero. On T plus T star, we can do basically the same thing, but instead of the Lie bracket, we have this generalized bracket, which is the Courant bracket. The Courant bracket should be up here. But it will appear at some point, then you saw it up there. It's a problem. So the Courant bracket is the Lie bracket of the two vectors, and then there are extra one forms, which are all these, the derivative of this one form along this vector, etc. This is all. But so the structure is analogous, it's very analogous to what we do in T, it's just we replace this V by V by this 2V by 2D matrix, the projectors with these projectors, and then the usual Lie bracket with this Courant bracket. Now a generalized almost complex structure has this form, where all these are D by D matrices. J, tilde, P, L, and K are D by D matrices. So in terms of maps, J, tilde is a map that goes from T to T, and so it has this structure of indices. P is a map that goes from T star to T, L is the opposite, and K goes from T star to T star, so it has the same distance. Now, if we demand these conditions, we get relations between J, P, L, and Q. We get in particular that K is related to J and P in this way, and then P and L are at the symmetric plane bridges. So a generalized almost complex structure has to look this way, where this matrix P or L is an anti-symmetric matrix. In particular, L here it has this index structure, it's like a two-form anti-symmetric, but here we have a two-form. Now, so a generalized almost complex structure has this form, and we can see how an almost complex structure is embedded in this generalized almost complex structure. For example, we can consider a generalized almost complex structure that has this form. So this obeys this form here. This shape inlay is a map from T to T, so this is like a regular almost complex structure. And then if we demand integrability of this generalized almost complex structure, we will get a condition on this small J tilde, and the condition is nothing else than this J tilde has to be integrable as a complex structure. So we see that a complex manifold, which has an integrable complex structure, it has also an integrable almost an integrable generalized complex structure. So a complex manifold is also a generalized complex. But we said a generalized geometry includes complex and symplectic geometry, so the symplectic manifold we also expect it to be generalized complex. And the way we embed a symplectic manifold into a generalized complex manifold is something like this. We consider another generalized almost complex structure of this form. So this obeys this condition. And so this shape here is like this L, this is a two form. And so if we demand integrability of this generalized almost complex structure, we get a condition on this form here, and the condition is nothing but the closure of these two forms. So if this J is equal to zero, then this generalized almost complex structure is integrable, so it's a generalized complex structure. And so if J is non-degenerate, we have a closed two form on the manifold, so the manifold is symplectic. So both complex and symplectic manifolds admit generalized complex structures. So the picture is something like this. And then locally, how do they look, the generalized complex manifold locally? Well, a complex manifold locally is equivalent to C B over 2, a complex manifold of real dimension B. A symplectic manifold is locally equivalent to RDJ, where J is the standard flat symplectic form. A generalized complex manifold is locally equivalent to this product of CK and RD minus 2 KJ, where this K is the rank. So this rank is 0 for a symplectic manifold, is equal to D over 2 for a complex manifold, and in general it can vary along the manifold. So a generalized complex manifold can locally look at some point like a symplectic manifold, and at another point it can look at the complex manifold. So this rank can vary along the manifold. So this is a brief review of things you've seen. Now, go on with the review. In particular, there's a one-to-one correspondence between generalized almost complex structure and pure spinors of spin D. In our case, P is equal to 6. That's the dimension we are interested in. So we look at spin 6, 6. And these pure spinors are the ones that appear in supergravity. In the sigma model, you see the generalized almost complex structure appearing naturally. In supergravity, you see the pure spinors appearing naturally. So this is this pure spinor construction. This is the part that we will see from the supergravity. Okay. So let's review this. Again, we do a comparison of what happens when we deal with this bundle and what happens when we deal with this bundle. So if P has spin 6, then we have the action of 3, 4, 6. The algebra of 3, 4, 6 is like this, as you know. Here we will consider 3, 4, 6, 6. And the algebra of 3, 4, 6, 6 is like this. And here, remember, we don't have a metric. To start with, we don't have a metric on T. So this gamma n, we think this is up. Gamma n, we think this is down, are independent. one in front of the other. So we can raise and lower the indices with the metric. So here we really have 12 gamma matrices, 6 with indices up and 6 with indices down. Right here we have 6 gamma matrices. There is a representation of this algebra in terms of forms. Now, later I will take another representation which is more useful, but for what I want to show here, this is a useful representation, but there are many ways to represent this algebra in terms of forms. One way is using complex coordinates, we can represent gamma with a holomorphic index as DCI wedge. So we wedge with a holomorphic differential, and gamma with anti-holomorphic indices as a contraction, as this, so this is a contraction along J, and with this G, I should part of this gamma I. So this obeys this algebra here, and this is a useful representation for what I want to say. Here we can do something similar, P plus P star, but we take this representation where gamma n is represent all the gamma n, both holomorphic and anti-holomorphic, are represented by this wedge, and gamma n down are represented by this contraction. So this also solves this. This also obeys this algebra here. There's a clip or vacuum that can be taken to be omega in both cases, and this is a pure spinor. So pure spinor is a spinor whose annihilator is maximally dimension, an isotropic subspace. Maximal dimension means that the dimension for it to be maximal, it has to be half of the dimension of the space. Here the dimension of the space is 6. So for it to be a pure spinor, we need to be annihilated by 3 of the gamma matrices. And you can see that these 3 gamma matrices, gamma I, annihilate the spinor because omega is already in 3-0 form. If we wedge with the CI, then we get 0. So these 3 gamma matrices, annihilate the spinor omega. So omega is a pure spinor of 3-4-6. Here, omega is also a pure spinor, and it can be annihilated also by gamma I, again, for the same reason. But here we have gamma I bar downstairs on omega, which is a contraction which contracts an anti-holomorphic index. But omega doesn't have any anti-holomorphic index, so this is equal to 0. So we can see that here we have 3 gamma matrices, here we have another 3. So 6 gamma matrices annihilate omega. So omega is also a pure spinor of 3-4-6-6. So it's annihilated by a space that has half the dimension of the total space. And using this Clifford vacuum or pure spinor, we can construct a basis that is constructing acting on omega with the gamma matrices that don't annihilate omega. So this looks exactly like what we do with spinors, with real spinors of spin 6. So pure spinor, for example, is a white spinor, is annihilated by gamma I. For example, the spinor with, let's say, with positive chirality is annihilated by gamma I. And then by acting with the gamma I bars, we construct the other spinors with different chiralities. Here is exactly the same, what we do. We act on omega with the gamma that don't annihilate omega, and we get, so this contracts a holomorphic index, so we get from the 3-0 form, we get the 2-0, then the 1-0, and then the 0-0. So spinors of 3-4-6 are equivalent to P0 forms. Here we have more gamma matrices to act with, so we can do this. In this case, since gamma I bar is not a contraction but it's a wedge to the I bar, what we get are 3-1, 3-2, and 3-4, and 3-3 forms. And then on the other hand, we can use this gamma I, the index I down, which don't annihilate omega, and we contract there one holomorphic index, or each time we send the holomorphic index by one, so we can construct all these forms. So spinors here are equivalent to PQ forms.
Which complex structure do you use?
Here, I'm using the complex structure to define these coordinates. I'm using the complex, so omega is a pure spinor that is related to a general, almost complex structure. So I'm using a complex structure figure. And we need to specify. I'm using a complex factor such that omega can be written as VCI, VCJ, VC, locally VCI, VCJ, VCI, wedge, VCJ, wedge, VCK, or VC1.
So it's ordinary complex structure.
Yes. Now, in the same way as they are irreducible representations, which are wild, Majorana wild for spinors, are we have also irreducible representations of spin 6-6, which are these sort of chiral representations, which in terms of form, they are either the even forms or the odd forms. So S plus, for example, is a space, is identified with a space of even forms, and S minus is identified with a space of odd forms. So here you see, every time we add with a gamma matrix, we get from a spinor that, that has one variety, we get a spinor that has the opposite variety, and etc. So it's the same as with regular spinors. These are the irreducible representations of spin 6-6. And in a manifold that has SU3 structure, we saw that there are two SU3 invariants. One is omega and the other is J. So there is another pure spinor that we can construct, which is not J, but is e to the ij. So e to the ij is sum of forms, 0 form, 2 form, 4 form, and 6 form. And this is also a pure spinor of spin 6-6. So this is also annihilated by half of the gamma matrices. Now it's not that easy to see, it's not that straightforward, but it's not very hard to show that these are the gamma matrices that annihilate the spinors. So these are 6 of the gamma matrices. If you do this using this representation, you see that it's equal to 0. So e to the ij is also a pure spinor of spin 6-6. So on a manifold with SU3 structure in P, we have two pure spinors of spin 6-6, which are omega and into the ij. This omega, where's the minus here? This omega belongs to S minus, so has one chirality, it's odd. And into the ij belongs to, so there's a minus here, into the ij belongs to S plus. So there are two pure spinors with opposite chirality. And these are such, they are not anything, because one, for example, you can see that one is also a pure spinor. If you act on this gamma matrix, you contract indices on one, it will give you 0, so it's also a pure spinor. But it's not good in the sense it's not in one-to-one correspondence with the generalized almost complex structure, because the spinors have to obey this. To be in one-to-one correspondence, the spinor have to obey this, which is that the spinor would the spinor, so this is the Mukai pairing, I guess, yeah, Marco talks about this. This means that from this wedge, you take the sixth form, and there are signs defined on this second form. So if it's a three form, a two form, and a four, two, three, and six, then you change the sign of this, of the form. That's how you define this pairing. And omega is such that this pairing, this Mukai pairing with omega bar is from 0, and also e to the ij, the pairing with this bar, so e to the minus ij is different from 0. This doesn't happen with 1, for example, 1 with 1. It's not different from 0, it's equal to 0. So, again, this means the wedge of this with this, but in here we are changing the sign of the two form, three form, and six form. And from this wedge this means taking the top form. So we're taking the six form out of this and taking the six form out of this. And this is different from 0 and this is different from 0. So spinors that obey this, that are pure and obey this, there is one-to-one correspondence between generalized almost complex structures. The correspondence goes the following way: the annihilator of the spinor, so pi is any pure spinor obeying this, so it's either omega or e to the ij in this case. The annihilator of pi is a plus I eigenbundle of this generalized almost complex structure. So these are both maximally isotropic subspaces. In this case, in our case, these are subspaces of dimension 6, and they are isotropic, means that they are null with respect to the metric, to the inner product defined in B plus star.
But under spin 6-6, the two four spinners has a equivalent amount, can you rotate one with another?
Sorry?
Can you rotate a negative to the IHA by spin 6-6?
You mean by acting with this?
Yes.
Can you know? I don't think you can.
Oh,
I said yeah, they are different. Well, but in principle, with acting with gamma matrices, you can do with the other.
Right.
If you know. So now, integrability of the generalized almost complex structure translates into a condition for the spinner, and the condition is that there is some vector and some one form such that the exterior derivative of the pure spinner is equal to this. So the pure spinner is not closed, but it's almost closed. It's closed up to this one form and this vector. So if this happens for the pure spinner, then the associated generalized almost complex structure is integrable. So now under this one-to-one correspondence, this spinner omega is sent to this generalized almost complex structure that we call shape 1 or Markov polyhedral shape. So omega goes to this generalized almost complex structure that contains the almost complex structure of the almost complex structure of the touching bundle, so the map from p to p and square to minus 1 and divided by p to minus 1. While to the IHA is sent to this other generalized almost complex structure that contains the two form and Markov polyhedral say omega because it's two form omega. And now, so we're ready to see what the generalized Calabi-Yau is. So generalized Calabi-Yau is a manifold that has one closed pure spinner. So it's a manifold that has a pure spinner such that d5 is equal to 0. And again, so this pure spinner is not anything but it's such that the Mukai pairing of the spinner with its bar is different from 0. So that's the Calabi-Yau manifold. If we have this condition, then it has one integral generalized almost complex structure. So it has one generalized complex structure. So a generalized Calabi-Yau is a generalized complex manifold. Okay, so this was a short review of what we need for supergravity. So supersymmetry equations can be written in terms of the pure spinner.
Sorry, because yeah. Closed spinner, but this spinner being closed, you need additional structure for that. It's not like covariant constants.
It means that the exterior derivative of phi.
You represent phi as a differential form, right? You always can come out of it with the spin
up. I think so.
You don't need additional particle.
You don't even. I mean, because it's an exterior differential, so the metric there, the connection there, that's good. I don't think you even need
anything
for that. Okay. You scream.
There's some people see, sorry. There's no
oh.
Sorry.
Oh, there's a four.
Yeah, that's the natural metric on people see, sorry, but not metric on the team.
Oh, and this would think inside it's a covariant derivative.
It's covariant. It's not remaining metric, so there's no relation.
So now we want to look at the Gansino variation, which again can be written like this. And here they were the projectors. Yeah, you write them. Here there was the sigma 3. And here they are sigma 1 and I sigma 2. Well, I think I said last time it's a sigma 2, but it's an I sigma 3. It's always real. But what it does is change the two epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 into epsilon 2 and epsilon 1. So this is the Gansino variation, this is what we will look at, and here I wrote it in terms of internal spinner. So I already composed the 10-dimensional spinner into something, a spinner in spin 1-3, that's an internal spinner, and I wrote the equation internal spinner. Now what we want to do is write supersymmetry equations using a basis for spinner. So this is, this theta here is It's not the cardinal spinors, but it's the Majorana spinor. So it's theta plus plus theta minus. And there's a basis for the spinor. It's given by eta and gamma m eta. So with this, we generate all spinors. In particular, for example, gamma m and eta can be written in terms of eta and gamma eta, and I'm sorry, and there's also gamma, the chiral gamma times eta. So there are three spinor zeta, the chiral gamma times eta, and the gamma eta. So for example, when you have two gamma matrices acting on eta, this can be written in terms of gamma eta, and then gamma 1 gamma, gamma t, eta using j and omega. For three gamma matrices, you can do the same. For gamma matrices, you can do the same. So you do this to rewrite things, and you do this to here. There are a number of gamma matrices acting on eta, so you always do this kind of decomposition. So you can write delta psi m in this form. Well, a term that doesn't contain any gamma matrices with an m index, and then a term with two indices that contains gamma matrices. This Q here imposes the torsion and the NS flux. So the part of the torsion is given by this. So the covariant derivative of the covariant derivative of the spinor is not equal to zero because we're not in a Calabi-Yau, and it's proportional to the torsion. So all the torsion components we write them in Q, and then the NS flux acts like this. So this also gives part of the Qs. And while the Rs encode the random number of fluxes. So this action we can decompose as something with one index and something with two indices and a gamma matrix. And then what we get for the torsion and the NS flux, well, the first thing that we have to use, so we want to know the covariant derivative of the spinor in terms of the torsion. So for this we use this decomposition, the composition of the J and the omega in terms of the representation, the different SU3 representations of the torsion, and then we use that these are bilinears of the spinor. So with this we can obtain the covariant derivative of theta in terms of this W1, W3, W4, and W2. And what we get is that the covariant derivative of theta, so these two we group them into Qs, but here you can see that the part that involves the torsion and the part that involves the NS flux. The covariant derivative of theta gives this W4 plus W5 Q, and then W1 with this G, and then W3 and W2 acting this way. So this W2 was a 1-1 form, W3 was a 2-1 plus 1-2 form. This here means W3 here. This W3 Mn is W3 Mnp contracted with omega Np, and I'm sorry, not the Pq, Pqn, and then symmetrized over M and M. So this is a symmetric two tensor in the 6 plus 6 bar. So this singles the 6 plus 6 bar representation. And then from this part, the NS plus contributes the vector. Here the vector is given by so all the representations are obtained by contracting with j's and omegas on the fluxes. The vector, for example, is given H3 m given by contracting with omega. Contracting with J. Mnp, Jnp. H in the single here is a full contraction with omega. H in the 6 is obtained exactly in this way as a contraction with omega, leaving these two indices. So you can see here that torsional fluxes, if your torsion complexifies the fluxes, it complexifies H in the 3, it complexifies H in the 1, and then it complexifies h in the 6. And here the distortion W2 is left alone because there is no, this is in VA plus 8, there is no NS plus in VA plus 8, so this part is left alone. So this is what I was telling you yesterday. From here you see that if you want a supersymmetric solution, we want the whole thing equal to 0, but suppose there are no Ramon fluxes, then we want this to be equal to 0. Representation by representation. So h in the 3 to cancel W4 and W5, h in the 1 to cancel W1, etc. You see here what Qm is in the 3 plus the bar representation of SU3, and Qmn we can decompose into Qij with two holomorphic indices, this is in the 6 plus 3 bar, and then Qij bar in the 1 plus 8. So this part, this part here is in the 6. In principle, there is a part. This part here is in the 6, and there's a, what should I say? The 6 is a primitive part. If you contract, so the 3 bar actually is here, it's not written in QHA, but it's written here. Is that right? Yeah, the 3 part is written here in H, in W4 and W5. And then this part here, QHA bar, contains the 1 and W2, which is in the A. And now, so again, we are rewriting this supersymmetry equation in terms of this basis, eta, gamma, and theta. And for the Ramanov flux, we do the same. We decompose all gamma matrices acting on eta. And we get something like this. For example, for 2b, we get Rm is equal to this, while Rmn is equal to this. Now, this Fb is the sum of all Ramanov fluxes in 2b, F1 plus F3 plus F5. And these products in parentheses are Clifford products. So for example, this one here, F omega, it's a Clifford product of F slash and omega slash. This is F, I1ik contracted with k gamma matrices, and omega contracted with k, or omega ABC contracted with 3 gamma matrices. And this index mn means taking the term with only two indices. For example, from this product of k gamma matrices and 3 gamma matrices, there are terms that contain k plus 3 gamma matrices, k plus 1, k minus 1, and k minus 3. Right? Whenever an index, so there's a term that is totally antisymmetric with all indices, and then there are contractions of one of these indices with one of these indices, or 2 with 2, or 3 with 3. So this is the different terms. And this mn here means take the coefficient of the term with 2 gammas. So using these Clifford products, we can write supersymmetry equations in a very nice and compact way. And so for example, if we do F1 and omega, so we do in Fi contract with omega I, and then gamma ABC, omega ABC, gamma ABC. So from here we have a term with 4 gammas and a term with 2 gammas. We want to take the coefficient of the term with 2 gammas, and the coefficient is just this. For 2a, we can also write the contribution of the Ramon-Ramon fields in terms of these Clifford products. Now fa is equal to the sum of the fluxes, f0 plus f2 plus f4, plus f6, also here. So fa has all these internal fluxes. And one can see a couple of things here. One thing is that the easiest way to do this Clifford products is to take this representation for the gamma matrices. So the gamma matrices can be represented as a wedge plus a contraction. So these are gamma matrices of 3-4-6, not of 3-4-6-6. So you can represent it like this, a wedge plus a contraction, this satisfies this, and it acts in this way. So a wedge, when you take all the wedges, it gives the term with k plus 3. When you take wedges and then one contraction here, it gives this term, it's two contractions, and this is the term that has the contractions, three contractions, and then the rest of it. So that's the easiest way to do these three four products, and this is the representation that we want to use.
So theta is a spinner of spin 6.
Yes.
And J is a symplectic form in T plus star.
No, no, J here is a symplectic form in T plus
star. Now I'm not wondering.
Yeah. I mean, there, omega and into the IJ, they are the pure spinners of spin 6, but they are forms on the. This is a form, this is a section of lambda 3 star, and this is the sum of even forms.
But you could do all this without knowing anything about your eyes on the geometry, you could just know this in that.
Right,
the IJ and omega are specific forms.
Yeah. You would have thought maybe of using e to the IJ in that case, but yes, it's, you can do. But now you. But I will tell you, I mean, now we like it because these are the two pure spinners that you find in the right
situation. Those FP and FA,
yes.
Can you make some comment? Were they actually supposed to run up so that you improve the dual?
So here we already dualize. So to start with, this include all the duals. And then we use the duality, the 10-dimensional duality that relates F2 with FA, for example. And FA, if we don't want to regularize invariants, then FA, for example, has to have four space-time indices and four internal indices. And we can trade it for an F2 that has only internal indices. So we're left with this F0 plus F6, yes, which are all internal. So this F6, it corresponds to F4 along space time. And F5 here is only internal because the self duality has been already important. One thing that this DXM will denote by lambda M, well, I'm not sure I'll use it, but. If I use it, this lambda M denotes its DXM wedge and then here it's standard compression. So the supersymmetry equations can then be written like this, this compact form, where here this is a shorthand for this contribution that I talked about. This H3, H1, and H in the 6 can also be written in terms of 3, 4 products. H in the 3 can be written, so H in the 3 is this, this H contracted with J, but it can also be written as a 3, 4 product of H to the IJ. The same with the singlet, and here also this can be written as a 3, 4 product, but it's not very nice. It's a 3, 4 product of this form that has an M index inside, so a people product of this form that has an M index inside, sorry, of this form that we have an M index inside, that's why I didn't write it like that. But it can be written also in terms of these people products with the pure spinner. But the Ramon-Ramon classes are this. So when you can see that these equations, when looking at the 2A and 2B, we exchange FA and FB. And also, if you look at here, there's an exchange of e to the ij and omega. This exchange of e to the ij and omega, it was conjectured by Fidanz, but shown, I'll tell you which case, by Fidanz, Amiasier, and Tomasiello, to be the action of mirror symmetry. So mirror symmetry, what it does in this SU3 structure manifold is to exchange this pure spinor. But actually it's a little bit more because these Ramon-Ramon fluxes are modified Ramon-Ramon fluxes. So they are these fluxes that include the H flux. So these are fluxes that obey non-standard and the identities, so they are not yet equal to zero. And when including this, what you get is a complexification of E to the IJ, and you get actually E to the B plus IJ. And this is exchanged with omega. So here they are E to the B plus IJ, and mirror symmetry exchanges these two pure spinors. actually, because I say, so maybe I'll say just two words about this mirror symmetry. The way Fidanza Minantiero and Tomasiello showed it is by using, so Strominger-Yau-Laszlo conjecture, and says that every Calabi-Yau is a T3 special Lagrangian vibration over a three-dimensional base, and that mirror symmetry is the duality along this T3. So what they did is that assume this SU3 structure manifold that meets this T3 vibration. This may not be true. This is one doesn't know it. In principle, not every SU3 structure manifold that meets the T3 vibration. It's not even clear if any SU3 structure manifold that meets the T3 vibration. But assuming this, we can do T-duality along this T3. And also they do a Hodge star on the fiber, and doing these operations, they show that the 2D I shape goes to omega. In particular, in practical terms, what these T-dualities do is interchange the spinor with positive chirality with the spinor of negative chirality. So from here, it's natural to think that it will change into the I shape and omega. And in terms of the Qs, what it does is exchange Qm with minus Qm. So this is an exchange of 3, or 3 plus 3 bar is 3 plus 3 bar, so this is not very interesting. But the most interesting is this exchange of Qij into minus Qij bar, as far as I mean, over the shape. So this is an exchange of 6 plus 3 bar into 8 plus 1. So mirror symmetry, what it does is exchange representations of torsion and an SNS plus. For example, if you saw that this conjecture of mirror symmetry exchanging NS plus by torsion in half flat, exchanging a Calabi-Yau plus NS plus into a half flat manifold, Calabi-Yau plus NS plus is something that has flux in the 6 plus 3. Because NX plugs cannot have an 8 representation, and half plug manifolds have torsion, in the 8 plus 1. But in general, one cannot, in this exchange, one cannot split into torsion and NX plugs. They come together in these fuse, and what the exchange of mirror symmetry is this, the exchange of 6 plus 3 bar into 8 plus 1 of torsion plus NX plugs. And also, supersymmetry backyard, which are such that u plus r is equal to 0, so the contribution of torsion plus NS fluxes plus the contribution of Ramon Ramon fluxes is equal to 0, are sent via mirror symmetry to supersymmetry backyard. So what should happen is also this exchange between the Ramon Ramon, the different components of the Ramon Ramon flux. So in particular, again, the 6 plus 3 should be exchanged with 8 plus 1. So this doesn't tell us what's the mirror of a certain vacuum, but it does tell us what could not be the mirror of a certain vacuum. The vacuum has a 6 plus 3 representation, it cannot be mirror of another vacuum that has Ramon-Ramon fluxes in the same representation. It should have Ramon-Ramon fluxes in this representation. And also between torsion and an SNS fluxes. So common, so let's go back to our viewer spinors. So we show that supersymmetry equations can be written in terms of viewer spinors. Now we want to find the equations for the viewer spinors themselves. So what is B of B to the IJ, or what is the omega? What does supersymmetry tell us about the closure or non-closure of these viewer spinors? So to find that, the first thing to notice is that viewer spinors can be written in terms of Weyl spinors. Using Pierre's rearrangement, this tensor eta plus tensor eta plus dagger, or eta minus tensor eta minus dagger, can be written in terms of these bilinears. And then this extra gamma. So from here you can, well, if you do this computation, you see that eta plus tensor eta plus dagger gives C to the IJ. This is C to the IJ slash, because there are these double matrices contracting with the indices of longitudinal shape. While if you do plus with minus, you get I omega. So again, this is a, so here you can see that these are spinors of 3466, but these are spinors of 3466, these are spinors of 3466. This is a spinor with positive chirality, it's positive and positive. This is a spinor of negative chirality, and it's constructed with a positive and negative chirality spinor. And again, the interchange of eta plus and eta minus is also in an interchange of e to the I shape and omega, the interchange in half of them. And we want to find B e to the I shape. Now, B e to the I shape is B exterior derivative, so it's e to the I shape is eta plus tensor eta plus dagger. If we take its covariant derivative, and then we do a wedge, so lambda was a wedge, this gives the exterior derivative of e to the I shape. So this is what we have to do. And so for this, we need the covariant derivative of theta plus and the covariant derivative of theta plus tagger. And imposing delta psi n equals to zero, we want to see b e to the I shape, what supersymmetry tells us about b e to the I shape. So we use delta psi n equal to zero in the supersymmetric vacuum, and this gives the covariant derivative of theta in terms of NS fluxes and torsion. So this gives me a meta in the same way. So we use this delta psi n equal to zero, we use this bilinear, and we also use the Dilatino equation in order to rearrange the equations, and we get these equations that you may think are ugly, but we're happy with these equations. So we get d e to the I shape and d omega in terms of h and f. And here it will be also d e to the I shape and d omega in terms of f and h. So let's look at all the things that appear here in this equation. First, this alpha and beta that appear here were the ones that define which is the conserved spinor in n equals 1. So we have epsilon 1 and epsilon 2. If we want to preserve n equals 1 supersymmetry, first they are split into a spinor in 4 dimensions and a spinor in 6. So they are split using this SU3 invariant spinor. And if we want to preserve n equals 1 supersymmetry, we said epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 are related. And so they are related by these complex numbers of functions, A and B. And from A and B, we constructed this alpha and beta. So this alpha and beta that appear all over, they basically give you how you break from n equals to 2 to n equals 1. So Calabria compactification has n equals to 2, has this as preserved spinor, and this as preserved spinor. N equals to 1, if you add fluxes, you break it into n equals to 1, and there's a relation between n equals to 1 and epsilon 2. That relation is given by this alpha and beta. So some vacuums have alpha equals 0, or beta equals 0, or alpha equals beta. Then, this FA e to the I shape is not a very nice operation, but this is equal to this. So here there are the Clifford products of this F. This F is the sum of the Hermitian part of F, 0 plus F4, with this combination, F2 and F6 with this combination, and this is what appears here. So this is not very nice, and I don't expect to copy it. We summarize this into this operation. Something not very nice, and probably not very useful if you want to get information about the vacuum more than what I will say. Here, FB into the IJ is something similar. FB is again the Hermitian part and the Hermitian part of F with these Clifford products, and again this alpha something done. Then these functions F and J that appear are combinations of the dilaton. So here's where the dilaton appears here, modifying or addressing this fewer spinor. A is the war factor, so remember that we are not doing a split into 4 times 6, not the product of 4 times 6, but it's a war product. So the four-dimensional space has its war factor inside. So the war factor appears here, also dressing the spinor, and then alpha and beta appear here, also dressing the spinor. And this J is some other combination that is F and G. Sorry, not G, G. F and G are the same here and here. And in the next slide, I will talk about this. What is this block here, which is the important point. So these equations look very ugly, but there's a...
If you don't have any fluxes, I think you can talk about this video.
Sorry?
If you don't have any fluxes, what do you recall?
If you recall that e to the ij and omega are equal to zero up to, well, the this. And then if you don't have any fluxes, then the relation between alpha and beta, and you can have any alpha and beta to preserve supersymmetry, and you get e to the ij and omega equal to zero. And phi is constant, so here it doesn't matter.
But you said that a and b are complex?
Yes.
Okay. So you have four real parameters to parameterize.
In principle, yes, but it can be shown that it's parameterized in terms of two angles, because the norm of alpha squared plus beta squared is equal to 1, and all the vacua actually depend on two angles, which are the norm of alpha divided by the norm of beta, or the norm of A divided by the norm of B, and then the phase of A B bar, if you want. So they depend on only two. In the end, they depend on only two angles.
So I thought that when you break N equals to 2, then equals to 1, you have a phase parameterized.
You have two angles, because in N equals to 2, you have SU2, R, the R symmetry is SU2, and in N equals to 1, you break it down to a U1, sub, a U1 subgroup. This is fixing one angle in the three-dimensional SU2 space. So it does depend on only. I will talk more about this tomorrow also, because tomorrow we will talk about the N=2. So again, these equations are ugly, but the important part, so modulo alpha and beta, we can rewrite it, rewrite them in this way. And what you see here is that this phi norm, e to the f, e to the ij, is twisted closed. And by twisted, I mean this H block, and I will tell you what this H block is here. But the important part is that the Ramon-Ramon flux doesn't affect the closure or the non-closure of this spinor, e to the F, e to the L shape. This is in 2A. In 2B is the same thing, but instead of e to the IJ, with omega. So e to the G omega is twisted closed, and again, twisting refers to this. These two facts are related by mirror symmetry. So in 2A we have a twisted closed pure spinor, in 2B we have a twisted closed pure spinor, e to the ij in 2A and omega in 2B. But this twisting, unfortunately, is not the standard twisting, but what we get is this twisting here. So instead of B minus H wedge, what we get is B minus H, and this that has two wedges and one contraction, and this term that has three contractions. So this operator that we call H flow is the same that appears everywhere. And this is different than the usual twisting. So Marco, I say, if you have a closed pure spinor, then this means that the associated generalized almost complex structure is integrable, and this we said means that the Courant bracket of two holomorphic vector plus one forms, or two holomorphic elements of P plus P star, is again holomorphic. But this can be twisted by, instead of the usual derivative, you consider this BH derivative, which is B plus H wedge. And this means that the associated generalized almost complex structure is integrable. And here, instead of using the Courant bracket, you use this H or twisted Courant bracket, in which you add an extra one form that is H contracted along the two vectors here and here. So this is the extra one form that appears in the twisted Courant bracket. But this is if you have H wedge, and here we have something more complicated than that. So this twisting by H in supergravity, and I should say here, in N equals 1 vacuum, because we will see that this is not the case in N equals to 2, does not work a la teaching what here. So, unfortunately, I thought, let's see the unfortunate thing for 2 minutes, but except for this, or taking into account, remembering that this twisting is not the standard twisting anyway. The manifold here is twisted synthetic because this spinner is twisted closed. And every time we talk about twisting, we talk about this twisting. So here the manifold is twisted symplectic. And in this case, the manifold in principle is twisted complex. But if you look at this H log omega in more detail, you will see that there is no 2-2 piece in this H log omega. And if the omega doesn't have any 2-2 piece, that's the condition for the manifold to be complex. Because a complex manifold is such that the omega is a 3-0 form, so the omega should be a 3-1 form, it cannot be a 2-2 form. And if you look at this, there is no 2-2 piece, so this H doesn't increase the complex structure. So here the manifold is in the complex. And that's why we know more about 2B Bapia than 2A Bapia, because 2B the manifold is complex. Like here it's twisted symplectic. So about this twisting, unfortunately, I thought by now we would have an answer to this, what is the meaning of this supergravity twisting by H, but we still don't know. So I will tell you two words, a couple of things. Well, one thing that we thought, we looked at if it was possible to twist the Coulomb bracket in a different way than H wedge. So to see that, you first notice that the Coulomb bracket, well, no, please tell you that the Coulomb bracket is a DI bracket. So I think Marco introduced the Coulomb bracket in this way. So these are commutators or graded commutators. The Coulomb bracket can be obtained in this way, where this is the zero derivative. Now the action of the B field on an element of T plus T star is an null joint action. So he defines the B to the B transform of these elements as something like this. The element plus this contraction along the vector of B. Now this can be rewritten as E to the B x plus I e to the minus B, where this is the standard, so this is E to the B A e to the minus B is A plus the commutator of B A plus 1/2 of the commutator of B B A, etc. So by this, we can reconstruct this contraction of B along X. So this action of E to the B, this B transform is an action and action. By noticing that, you can show that E to the B A, so using this action E to the B B, which is equal to this, using that the Coulomb bracket is a DI bracket, and modifying A and B by E to the B, you do calculations and you can show that this is equal to e to the b, the e to the b and e to the minus b rearrange themselves to get this. And this e to the b, e to the minus b, e to the b is this bh2h, b plus h2h. So that's how the twisted Coulomb bracket appears, by dressing this x and x and psi with e to the b in this algebraic form. So now this is E to the B, and then E to the B acting on the twisted Coulomb bracket. So E to the B is an automorphism of the Coulomb bracket, and if you consider a non-closed B, if you consider a closed B, then you get B, so you get back the Coulomb bracket here. If B is non-closed and DB is equal to H, then you get here the twisted Coulomb bracket. Now, we asked ourselves, can we have the action of a more general two-index operator? So can we consider the action, the adjoint action, but instead of E to the B and E to the lambda, where lambda is this two form plus this two vector or two contractions, and then this sort of vector, this dual vector form. So can we do E to the lambda, E to the minus lambda here? And what do we get here? Do we get B plus something that is probably not H wedge? This was one of the things that we thought. But then if we want to impose that E to the lambda, B, E to the minus lambda, starts as B plus, and then you're going to get derivatives of this B, C, and D with a number of lambdas and iotas, contracted for some combination of derivatives and lambdas and iotas, but we want this to start with the B because we have the B with a V plus H, but the operation here is not three wedges, but something more complicated. And we want to impose this. But doing this, this enforces lambda to be just this Vmn lambda nn. So this is the usual twisting. So this was the first naive thing to try to do the edge induction of a more general to index operator, but we are forced to have just the action of each of the V as they do it. And then I spare you the details. We unsuccessfully try to understand supergravity twisting in different ways. So as of today, the answer of this is we still don't know what's the meaning of this supergravity twisting by H.
This operator is defined D plus the system.
Yes.
Is it square zero?
No.
So why do you say that this enforces the usual problem? What is the condition that enforces that? You do this, and then you get here things
that have mixed derivatives of C, and then these, you get extra things here as first term. If you want this to start with a D, then you are forced to have these. If you want a clean D and then plus something else, then you're forced to have this usual twisting. But I don't know, maybe this was something stupid. Well, that was one of the ideas, the first idea that we had. Take the Courant bracket, but just to try to see the action of some different operator.
In physics, why do you need it?
I mean, you want to understand what the six-dimensional manifold is. In the case where you have V and you have one closed pure sphere, then you know this six-dimensional manifold is a general scalability, and there are many things that you can do. If you have V plus H wedge, then you will know V plus H wedge of a pure sphere being equal to zero, you will know it's a twisted generalized Calabi-Yau, and then so this, you can think of it as having a generalized almost complex structure that is integrable under the three people and brackets, and under many things that you can learn from that. So it would be nice to understand if what we have in supergravity can be understood as a twisting of some bracket. This bracket, the Courant bracket satisfies Jacobi identity only in this maximal isotropic subspace. So, for example, in the plus I am, and that's also the fact that this doesn't square to zero is also related to the Jacobi.
So, the geometry that geometry n equals 2 quarters of the model is not the same as the geometry that supergravity.
No, n equals to 2.2 sigma models, you get this. It's not the same as n equals 1, which is 2.1 sigma models. If you had only NSNS plus, it would be 2.1 sigma models. And then you don't get these figures.
Okay, so to
conclude, we saw that E to the F, E to the HA is twisted closed. So the manifold is twisted, it's inflecting in 2A, while E to the G omega is twisted closed in 2B, so the manifold is complex, these are related by mirror symmetry. And although we don't understand what this twisting is, we hope we understand this twisting, but we can say that supergravity vacua, N equals 1, supergravity vacua, are all twisted, generalized Calabi out. And again, we need to understand what this twisting means. So the picture is, if we put dH omega, and again, this dH is not the dH D plus H wedge, but it's D plus this H blow omega on this axis. On this axis, we put dH E to the HA. When dH E to the HA is zero, the manifold is twisted, is inflected. When dH omega is zero, the manifold is complex. We say this H twisting doesn't twist the complex structure, so the manifold is complex, not twisted complex. So what we saw is that Ramon-Ramon flux is only affect the non-closure of omega in the case of 2A, so they only move you along this direction. So they affect only one of the two equations in 2a, while in 2b they affect also only one of the two equations, but it's the other equation, so they move you along this direction. So the fluxes in 2b contribute to the non-closure of E2dij, while the fluxes in 2a contribute to the non-closure of omega. So 2b vacua are all in this axis, so these dots correspond to different configuration of fluxes in 2b, and they are all complex. While 2a vacua are all along these fluxes, they are all twisted symplectic. And there is this solution by Strominger and Hall in 86 that they found for the heterotic, and it's also there for 2a and 2b, type 2a and type 2b theories. That, and this has only NSNS flux. So if it has only NSNX flux, it has to be here. The manifold is both complex and twisted symplectic. So the intersection will have this Strominger solution. So that's what I want you to remember from this N equal 1 story, that that we get a twisting that is not the usual twisting, but considering this unusual twisting, the Ramon-Ramon fluxes, what they do is add to the non-twisting of to the non-closure of one of the pure spinors. This is omega in 2a, while the spinor is in 2dij in 2b. So these manifolds are all complex 2b and they are twisted symplectic in 2a. And they are all twisted generalized at Abelian. So this generalized complex geometry should allow us to be the, so it's the right tool to describe this vacua or in the same framework and to understand, for example, moduli spaces of this vacua, which are not known. So I'll stop here. Let's go on tomorrow with some N=2. Thank you.
So do we have more questions? So we said there's a no-closure for compact. Is it, how do you
go around it?
No, go around it. How do you see it?
You can see it from the, for example, the right. Probably you can see it in the way that that Markov is with B, sort of B plus, making the square of B plus B dagger, and or BH plus BH dagger. In the way we see it is in the, from the Einstein's equation in four dimensions, you get R mu nu has to be equal to the Laplacian of the war factor, and then fluxes, some contribution of the fluxes, some squares of F and H. If you integrate that along, if you integrate that over a compact manifold, then this Laplacian integrates to zero, while the contribution from F and H doesn't integrate to zero. So again, you get the no-go theorem for compactification of Laplacian. So you know how to go around this no-go theorem in the case. So there's one of these solutions here in which the fluxes, the NS flux is related is dual to the Ramon-Ramon flux, and this is the solution in which the complex Fifon flux F minus I H, F minus tau, sorry, F minus tau H is imaginary cell dual, and in that case you know how to, so you can add oriented for three planes to compensate if you have negative tension. In the other cases, in principle, you could add oriented for five planes, but more general configuration of fluxes, you need sort of O3 and O5 planes, which would break supersymmetry, so we don't know how to go around this. It's more of theory, in the general theory.
Oh, there's a case with supersymmetry, there's the charge of O5 and O3.
No.
Oh, okay, then there's no problem. There's no problem.
What I mean is, in principle, these fluxes would need all kind of oriented planes. These fluxes are effective D3 charge as well as D5 charge.
Oh.
So they would need.
Oh, is there such a case with supersymmetry?
Yes.
Oh,
Yeah. The fluxes are not. If the fluxes are not imaginary cell dual, for example, in 2B, if the fluxes are not imaginary cell dual, then you get effective charge that is. like more general than the district charge.
But we're in a rainfall background, the rainfall could kill whatever it doesn't mean.
Yeah, the problem is that if you need all three planes, then you're fine. If you need something more like all three or five, that's not super symmetric. There's no bound state of three or five.
Well, you get a super symmetric.
Yeah, well, three or seven, or maybe this doesn't cancel. If that cancels your tadpoles,
then
fine.
I'm just saying that if you have tadpoles coming from your classes, like in mean by frame tadpoles, then the rainfall plane, the symmetry will kill it by magnetic image under the rainfall.
And you say, well, then you
yeah,
say
like
you can't have. Susie will be in the rainfall, three and five.
Yeah, but I don't want to stop five. So, well, she say you need all five to cancel some.
I mean, it's true. I guess if you start with an O3 plane and you project out, then the solutions are not there. So the idea would be to start with something else so that you see the solution is not killed, but then you don't know.
There are no further questions. Let's thank Mary Ann again. There's one more lecture in the series tomorrow at the same time, same place.